Thank you, Greg. This will strictly be from an extension perspective to talk about the outreach program and how I've used the resources of Virginia Cooperative Extension towards urban nutrient management planning, as Dr. Vanilow said. My focus is on the Chesapeake Bay watershed. It's 64,000 square miles, or roughly 30,000 hectares, with over 100,000 tributaries feeding into it. The major recreation and economic driver for this region, great tourist destination. And we've got six states going all the way up from parts of New York, Pennsylvania, parts of West Virginia, Delaware, Maryland, and Virginia, and the District of Columbia are contributing to the Bay watershed. And we go back to 2009, 2010, there was an executive order signed by President Obama that there is a commitment for the Chesapeake Bay TMDL to basically establish a pollution diet. And from that pollution diet that set in basically a series of chain reactions towards development of plans on a state-by-state basis, a District of Columbia basis, to address what we're going to do to clean up the Chesapeake Bay and to try to achieve targeted goals in terms of nitrogen, phosphorus, and suspended solids or sediment in this system. We are currently in what is known as Watershed Implementation Plan Phase 2. Implementation Plan Phase 1 was essentially for each state to develop what their criteria were going to be and to propose to the Environmental Protection Agency, which is overseeing all this, how this was going to work and what were going to be the goals on a step-by-step basis towards showing improvement in the Bay. We're in Phase 2, which is basically reviewing what was dreamed up in Phase 1 by each state. EPA came back with a blessing, or you need to work on this some more because we don't think this is going quite far enough, et cetera. We're moving now towards 2015 for this phase to try to see can these states and the district reach these certain goals and benchmarks in Bay water quality that were established. In every 2 years, there are reviews made for each state with the ultimate goal of achieving where we want to be by 2025. If we do not show progress towards reaching these goals in water quality, there are cuts in federal funding. That's the consequence of not meeting those targets, and it ranges all across the board in terms of how those cuts can be applied in terms of transportation, you name it, but there are lots of different ways in which federal funds can be held. In my state, I work with basically three agencies in Virginia with the implementation and formation of these watershed implementation plans. In Virginia, the Virginia Department of Environmental Quality has a regulatory function, and their primary goal has been in working with MS4 stormwater permitting. And it relates to what I do or how I collaborate with my colleagues and others, but I don't do a lot of direct work with DEQ per se. They are in their stormwater permitting process. They are starting to, and my understanding is soon that there will be a requirement for nutrient management plans to accompany stormwater permitting. The other agency in Virginia which has regulatory activity is the Virginia Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services. VDACs is what we refer to them in the state. VDACs is our group that does weights and measures. They do our Office of Pesticide Programs, so pesticide certification. They're the ones that check your gas pumps in Virginia, et cetera. They've also been tasked by our state government to have enforcement criteria in terms of certified fertilizer applicator programs. And then the one that I spend the most of my time working with in my collaborative efforts is the Virginia Department of Conservation and Recreation. And DCR does not have regulatory capability, but through state laws in Richmond and the enforcement capability of these other two agencies, the programs that are run through DCR definitely tie in quite well with what DCR is trying to do. Today I'm going to tell you about the collaborations that we formed with Virginia Cooperative Extension and those sister state agencies, and also some of our professional trade associations in the state and the moves that they have made to basically try to improve water quality. I'm going to tell you what I think are the programs that we've had some success in, and I'm certainly going to give you a little bit of background on what I think are the challenges and opportunities for the immediate future. The coming opportunities for any of you that are extension-based and have watersheds, which we all do, but the Bay was the first watershed that basically the federal government came into and gave the EPA the challenge that let's get this cleaned up. Next, in terms of what I hear, is the Mississippi River Basin. One of the first things that was done in the Bay Watershed was there was formation of an expert panel. This expert panel included university scientists, extension specialists, industry engineers, and folks from the environmental groups that all came together, and we essentially did a very comprehensive review of the literature. Many of the paper citations that we've had presented today are included in this report. And this report was presented then to the Chesapeake Bay program, where it was reviewed there about will they accept these recommendations or not. And so there were a few iterations of this document made, but essentially it came up with what I would term as our BMPs for nutrient management planning and reduction of nutrient loading in the bay. So this became a Chesapeake Bay program approved final report, and from this most of the states in the Bay watershed are developing their protocol to continue to make the progress towards 2025. The DCR group that, again, I do most of my collaboration with towards meeting the watershed implementation plan goals, what they are interested in terms of showing that progress is being made is they need acreage under certified nutrient management plans. So they need plans that somehow, some way is coming under the auspices, the development of someone that has specific training and knowledge in fertility, soils, plants, etc. So they need certified acreage under nutrient management plans. To do this, you logically have to have certified plan writers. And until all this got started, that essentially was something that was not in place in Virginia. But Virginia has had, for several years now, a highly successful production agricultural nutrient management program and planning training and certification program. So the wheels were already in motion for something that we felt like we could develop in Virginia. They've been quite successful in their training and testing program for the ag group. What we basically did at Virginia Cooperative Extension was we took what they had in place at that program, used that as our model, and we developed our own urban nutrient management planning trainings and certification program. And this came about, it was basically in the works from 2008 and 2009. In 2010, and Dr. Vanilow played a large part of this with myself in terms of what we were trying to do, is we had to develop the test, we had to review the questions, we had to develop the protocol for how it's going to be administered, but everything here is administered by the Department of Conservation and Recreation. They control all the testing components. They work with us in doing a lot of the teaching that is involved in doing that. But a big part of this was development of this publication, the Urban Nutrient Management Handbook, which was developed by VCE and Virginia Tech faculty and staff with our colleagues at DCR, put together what's essentially a 215-page manual that's everything we could think of about urban nutrient management and the management of turf grass systems and other landscape plants, etc. This is the training manual that is made available to anyone that's planning on becoming a certified nutrient management plan writer. And we do still offer face-to-face training. Matter of fact, our next training session in Virginia takes place, one of the days is next Monday, in which we'll have another 30 to 35 individuals interested in becoming plan writers. These plan writers are compensated for their efforts in doing this. To date, in the last 4 years now, basically since this program has been going on, we have certified 143 new turf and landscape nutrient management planners. What these folks do is they come onto your property, they will take a specified number of soil samples. For instance, on a golf course, it's not necessary to sample all 18 greens, tees, and fairways. The Department of Conservation and Recreation does not require that level. That tends to drive some of our golf course superintendents crazy that they wouldn't do it that way. They'd sample them all, but that's not required as far as what DCR requires. But they want to have a plan of attack, a nutrient management plan, laid out and developed. All state-owned lands must have nutrient management plans in place by now. So at Virginia Tech, our Turfgrass Research Center is under a nutrient management plan. The football field is under a nutrient management plan. Again, anything that has to do with the state, so universities, all government buildings, Virginia Department of Transportation has to have nutrient management plans. The next phase is how do we start capturing more acres? Golf courses and athletic fields, those are pretty straightforward, pretty easy to identify, but at this point in time, all of this is still voluntary. There's nothing mandatory in play yet. Golf courses, I'll tell you more about, they have come to their own agreement with DCR about how they're going to do. Athletic fields are probably going to fall under municipalities and localities that are managing them. So I am definitely preaching to my parks and rec people, my school people that I work with, that please start working towards getting a nutrient management plan in place, or at least don't be surprised when you're told you're going to have this. And the 500-pound gorilla in the back of the room is certainly the home lawn setting, because far and away is, in any situation, the largest acreage, clearly, okay, that is under or not under nutrient management planning is home lawns. And what are we going to do about home lawns? To address this, there have been programs developed. The CFA is a certified fertilizer applicator. And we had a state law a couple of years ago that said we want you to develop a certified fertilizer applicator program. And this is going to be our first foray into bringing in lawn care operators into some type of compliance with, we agree we want to improve water quality. So any contractor applicator or licensee that applies fertilizer on a contractual basis to more than 100 acres, they must report the fertilizer they apply in those acreage to a regulatory agency to be considered as part of acres under plan. Again, state agencies, localities, under municipal governments, et cetera, we were already there, so that is being reported on an annual basis now. These are reported to the Virginia Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services, and they're reported by zip code. And you either get a total acreage or square footage of the land that's receiving that fertilizer, and how much of that maintenance fertilizer is being applied within a calendar year. That calendar year basically rolls to February 1st. From February to February is when they want the reporting. But what this has done, since there are three different agencies that I told you that I am either closely involved with or on the periphery involved with, is it results in some real challenges, because now you've got to get agencies within the state to start communicating with each other. So if DCR feels like they've been tasked with the primary reporting component that goes back to the EPA, well, how does DCR receive their information from the Virginia Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services? And these people all know each other, and they're all pretty close to each other in Richmond, so you would think that they talk, but they don't talk that much, is what I found out in terms of what's going on. That's an inherent challenge that is within the government, the state government, in terms of this communication that goes back and forth. Best I can tell, they all like each other, they all get along, but nobody wants to share, at least freely, what the heck is going on. So they're still working on that, but we're making progress there. These large lawn care operators, they report to VDACs. Some of them also report to DCR. That is good, but it's also bad, because it means in the eyes of EPA that the turf industry and their acres being reported is essentially double dipping. And right now they don't have any clear and easy way of handling this, so their current proposal is that they're simply going to take somewhere between 20 to 50% of the acreage reported right off the top and say that doesn't count because we think there's double dipping going on. So this is another problem in Richmond that is yet to be figured out in terms of reporting, but reporting certainly is something that is not going to go away anytime soon, and we need to have a better way of figuring out how to actually capture these acres to ensure there's not double dipping. DCR on their own has reached out to the smaller lawn care operators, so those folks that aren't treating 100 plus acres. And again, this is all voluntary at present, but what they're doing is they have developed what they call a water quality agreement program. And on a voluntary basis, what they do is they ask that these smaller LCO companies that they will please participate, send in their data in terms of acreage that's being treated and with what type of fertilizer. The only thing they can basically offer to that applicator is that they get a spot on the website that promotes that these folks are environmentally responsible and they're trying to do the right thing, so please support them and utilize them. Again, they have no regulatory capability. The only regulatory actions would come from either DEQ or VDACs. Our progress, I describe it as slow. Our acreage under nutrient management plans, quite small to date. In 2013, we had a target of 60,000 acres to be under nutrient management plans for maintained turf. We achieved 40,000 acres. In the very near future, about this time next year, our goal is 517,000 acres. So there's a lot of work to be done in the next 13 months in order to get anywhere close to this target of 517,000 acres. Following in line with this in terms of, again, trying to offer resources to our turfgrass industry to meet these ever-increasing requirements, and some things, again, that there's still are voluntary but probably going towards mandatory, was development of what we call fertilizer applicator certification training and testing, FACT. It's a free online training and testing program for Virginia turfgrass industry professionals, and it's a collaborative effort of Virginia Tech, Virginia Cooperative Extension, DCR, VDAX, okay? All of us came together, but basically Virginia Cooperative Extension took the lead and said, we're going to develop the site, we're going to host the site. We launched in April of 2013. It is its own dedicated website. You see the address here. It is coming through Virginia Cooperative Extension and Virginia Tech on the web, but this site is strictly devoted to only fertilizer applicator certification training and testing. It utilizes Scholar, which I'm sure many of the academics in here probably use in their programs. It's Tech's university-supported learning management system. It therefore can be used as a training resource, but also a testing resource, and the testing, the grading is automatic. So essentially, my time in terms of developing this was coming up with the content. It was my IT colleague, Mark Sumner, that did the bulk of the work in terms of bringing all this to exist in a Scholar fashion that makes it fairly easy to use. It contains 10 online self-paced modules. It's open 24/7, 365. Everything has been made using Adobe Presenter files. Everything is in PDF format. There are numerous training videos which support it. And, of course, what everyone is ultimately interested that gets on here, they're typically wanting to know, can I take the test? And you can take the test at any time you want to without the training. You have to pass each exam with at least a 70% grade. I'm usually asked, is this test, how do you guarantee no one is cheating? I can't, because it is open book. It is there for anyone to go with, and you have to hope that folks are doing the right thing in terms of offering this. But this was an unfunded mandate by the state government that we want you to have this program. So we've given them a program, but there are still some things that could be done to improve. These are all areas, and I won't go through every one of them for you, but if you were developing something for fertilizer certification, you probably would cover calibration and the calculations and calibration of spreaders and sprayers, and I'd talk about soil testing and tissue testing and how to interpret fertilizer labels, etc. So each one of these components essentially has myself or one of my colleagues doing a voiceover PowerPoint that takes them through step by step, and once you're through, then you log into and see if you can pass the exam. The exam is fairly rigorous, and I'll say that because of being an academic, I didn't want them to be able to fog the mirror and pass. The first time I took the exam, I made 85%, and that worried me dearly because I wrote the exam. And so we found some of the bugs that were in the system to get the answers to show up right. And to date, we feel like we've been pretty successful, and the general public response to this has been pretty pleasing. A lot of our high school teachers have started using this in their classrooms since it is self-contained and available 24/7, 365, and like the concept of I can have someone provide these lectures, these training materials outside the classroom to reinforce what's going on. During its first year, there were 790 people that enrolled in the test. 325 of them had successfully completed the training. It's amazing to watch on rainy days in the winter. The activity on this site is huge. During the busy season, there's hardly anyone that is utilizing this. When I checked the other day and asked what were the current numbers, we're close now to 1,000 participants with about 450 people that have completed their fertilizer applicator certification training. The other thing that Virginia Cooperative Extension has been collaborating with the Department of Conservation and Recreation on was adjustments in our fertilizer programming. In Virginia, what I would say is basically our Bible for nutrient management programming is what we call the Department of Conservation and Recreation Standards and Criteria. And so all of our crops, production agriculture, as well as a small portion of this book, which is devoted to turf, have nutrient management guidelines in terms of fertility recommendations for amounts, timing, et cetera. And Virginia is a transition zone state, so we grow both warm season and cool season grasses, just none of them very well. And one of the things that we have changed most recently in the standards and criteria are our levels of soluble nitrogen. in terms of recommendations for how much nitrogen can you apply in a single application event if it's soluble. And we have now gone to 7/10 of a pound of nitrogen per 1,000 square feet per active growing month as our standard cap of how much soluble nitrogen that we tell people. So I want plant available nitrogen, 7/10 of a pound over a growing month. We say there's our cap. There was a technical advisory committee formed to debate this, and our colleagues at University of Maryland had already done this. I was on the committee, and I told them I'm going to be very noncommittal either way. I was perfectly happy with 1 pound of nitrogen per 1,000 square feet. I can accept 7/10 of a pound, too. I don't think we're going to see that big of a difference in terms of what's going on, and especially after hearing my colleagues talk about it, a more mature stand, these levels are probably reasonable. One thing that didn't change is down here on the bottom. I don't know if I can find that thing, Dr. Van Loeswa, but the rates at the bottom, 2 to 3.5, 2 to 4, our seasonal totals for pounds of nitrogen, those did not change in terms of what you could apply to a turf grass on a seasonal basis. But this is one step. We've also come up with protocol for controlled-release fertilizers and what those limits would be. And, of course, in Virginia, we also grow a lot of warm-season grasses as well. And in general, these programs are a little more forgiving for warm-season grasses. We can apply slightly higher levels to warm-season turf than we do for our cool-season grasses. The Virginia Golf Course Superintendents Association has been very proactive on their own in terms of protecting water quality. They developed their own environmental best management practices for Virginia's golf courses training manual. This manual was, again, a lot of involvement from Virginia Tech and Virginia Cooperative Extension, but in this case also with golf course superintendents and architects as co-authors on the chapter. This publication is cross-listed with our Virginia Cooperative Extension publications because it is peer-reviewed, and VGCSA is committed that all of Virginia's golf courses will have nutrient management plans as 325 golf courses by 2017. And they've got about a third of the people already signed up with nutrient management plans in place. The last, and again, the biggest challenge is what to do with these lawn acreages. And I was really amazed when I came to Virginia back in 2004 how strong of a Master Gardener volunteer program that we have in urban nutrient management. And the gentleman we see in this picture here is a guy by the name of Bob Winters from James City County. And Bob's a retired engineer that took nutrient management and lawns as his personal passion here. And his program in James City County is second to none. Got a lot of good programs in the state of Virginia, many that you see listed here by name. These are all in mostly urban areas. And the challenging part here is over in the bottom right is for all the work that these people are doing, and it's great work by these volunteers. This is 1 year's worth of data. It only accounts for 314 acres to be brought under urban nutrient management. So there's a lot that still has to be done to try to figure out how do we better mobilize and take advantage of these talents. The challenges are, essentially, is 1 yard at a time, and there's no distinction between a 5,000-square-foot lawn versus a 500-square-foot lawn in terms of what's required. And the programs, those names I quickly flashed up there, no one wants to lose their identity. And so in the extension world of volunteers, it's my program, I want it to be called my name. So we are finally about ready to reach that point where that has been resolved in the next few months. Okay? Can the reporting requirements be modified? Can HOAs actually come on board and we could take neighborhoods instead of 1 yard at a time? We're not there yet, but that's something I'm definitely pushing. And the last thing is, what will be the carrot that is going to be dangled in front of people to get them to, you know, take part of this program? What is being considered is that there will be urban cost share programs similar to the ag cost share programs. They possibly would be run by local soil and water conservation districts, and there would probably be some type of a refund or tax break that would come back to a homeowner that would participate in an urban nutrient management program. Okay, Dr. Van Loeswa is coming to get me, so I don't know if there's any question time.